Hello, Legends. Before we get into the episode, I just want to quickly tell you about a brand new show that I have just released. It's called Crime at Bedtime. And as the name suggests, it's been designed with those in mind who like to go to sleep at night listening to a fascinating true crime story. We'll release a brand new episode every single Monday, but right now there is a stack of episodes for you to binge straight away. So go check it out. It's called Crime at Bedtime. It's available wherever you get your podcasts from.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com. Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
When I was in Iowa, he's in the car door right now. Can you hear him?
Yeah, I can hear him, yeah.
Okay, he stopped.
Hello. And welcome back to 1 Minute Remaining. My name is Jack Lawrence, the host and creator of this show. Today is part 3, and the final part for now, in the story of Raimundo Chigoya. Arrested in 2000 for the murder of Billy Medlin, he has been incarcerated for over 23 years for a crime he says he didn't commit. In our previous episode, we started looking at the police's apparent evidence against Raimundo, which is essentially just eyewitnesses. Raimundo says they did collect some physical evidence at the scene, but this had no link to him.
I know they collected bullet shells and cigarette butts.
So that was their apparent evidence, was bullet casings and some cigarette butts. Was there any connection with those items to you?
No.
Did you smoke at all?
No.
Right. And I'm assuming they never presented a weapon or found a gun that was connected to the crime?
No.
So when they did they present these shell casings and the cigarette butts during the trial? Did they bring them up as evidence in the trial?
I remember my attorney asked me if I smoked multiple times. He asked me, and I told him, no, I didn't. And so during the trial, they happened to leave the buds out, and they failed to mention those.
So they had the cigarette butts, but they didn't actually bring that up in court because obviously it had no connection to you, so they didn't even mention it at all.
Yeah, correct.
So back to our so-called eyewitnesses. We have a 17-year-old girl who herself had a history with police. She was a young mother with alcohol and drug problems. Raquel from the California Innocence Clinic says she initially tells officers she has no idea who the shooter was, but would eventually change that story to say that it was, in fact, Raimundo.
You have a girlfriend who says it's him eventually, not at first, says, I don't know who it was. I thought they were shooting at us. They ran away. We were talking to somebody, yeah, and then we ran away, who eventually says, oh, yeah, it was Raimundo, after the police threatened to arrest her for the crime.
Also, when it came to the lineup that these witnesses were shown, even that was highly suggestive.
Again, it was the going over the transcripts. The investigator shows him the six-pack lineup, and it has nothing but family members in there. One being my deceased brother, cousins. They're all Chigoyas. It was a six-pack of nothing but family members.
Oh, they showed a lineup with literally all of your family members. Well, not all of your family members, but everyone in the lineup was a member of your family.
Yes.
To me, this looks to add weight to Raimondo and his attorney's suggestions that the police were gunning for this family.
And because he's well known in the community and his family name is, he really didn't stand a chance with the evidence they had and hiding the evidence that would have helped him.
As we know from previous episodes, this 17-year-old was there with her boyfriend, who was a distant cousin of Raimondo's. A detective would say that this boy's mother told him that her son and his girlfriend had said Raimondo was the shooter. However, he would testify at trial that this did not happen. He did not say that to his mother. And he never said Raimondo was the shooter. You would have two more witnesses. One was the friend of Billy Medlin. He would come out of the room after hearing the commotion outside and see his buddy get shot. And he would also, apparently, pick out Raimondo.
One other questionable eyewitness who gave a tentative identification, which the research now says, if there's like an immediate positive identification, that's him, without any of the problems, then okay, maybe, but it wasn't.
The buddy of the guy, of the individual who got murdered, he points me out, and I know from the transcripts, when the investigator gets up and leaves, it states that he asked him desperately if he picked out the right person.
Was, I think it's him. It's tentative. Did I get it right? He's asking the detectives like, hey, did I? And they're like, you know, who knows what they said? Yeah. And that's contamination of the eyewitness.
Lastly, we have a lady who Raimondo believes was related in some way to the owner of the motel.
She supposedly points me out the following day. They show her a six-pack lineup the following day, and she points me out. However, it wasn't until 3 days later that they actually took a photo of me and had my picture.
So she's picked out someone, but it's obviously not you because they didn't have a photo of you.
Correct. I know my lawyer found out that they actually took away her visa. She is from India.
They used her visa as leverage.
Correct.
During the trial, did your attorney sort of question, you know, especially with her, did you guys know at the time that she picked you out the day after and you didn't get picked up for 3 days later? Was that ever sort of brought up in trial as to how she could pick you out if you hadn't even been arrested for it yet?
No, none of this was brought up.
Raimondo had never been arrested by police before, which means they didn't have a photo of him on file to put in that lineup. So the question here is either, number one, how did he end up in this six-pack lineup? Or number two, who did she actually pick out if his photo wasn't in that lineup?
And even the one who does identify him, the only one that would, I would, you know, in quotes, say the strongest identification, you have cross-racial identification issues, one. You have her admitting, I didn't look at his face. I never saw his face. I never even took a good look at it. I was looking through the window in and out. How do you positively identify somebody who you didn't even look at their face? Cross-racial identification, red flag. There's just red flags over and over in this case, all of it. And I get frustrated. You probably can hear the frustration in my voice because we keep getting denied in courts because they're saying our evidence isn't strong enough because there was this strong case against him. If we're defining that as a strong case, there's just no hope for any reform in the criminal legal system here in the United States. It's just, it's depressing.
One thing police will always look for when it comes to a crime such as this is motive. Who had a motive to kill Billy Medlin? When they find their suspect, the question is, what would their motive have been for killing Billy Medlin? So what was the apparent motive for Raimondo to murder Billy? The prosecution openly admits that there was no specific motive for this crime. Raimondo says they just sell it to the jury that he doesn't need one. He's a gang guy. They just kill people for no reason.
These three witnesses, these are the, this is all they had against you, really, was these three witnesses.
Yes.
And did you know the person who was shot and killed?
No, I didn't.
Did they ever come up with a motive as to why you would have been the one who did it?
When I ran the trial, I know the DA came up with the story that it was to show that I was a big badass around town, and it worked.
Raquel from the California Innocence Clinic says their argument for this being a random shooting can be easily debunked for a number of reasons. One of those being the presence of a getaway vehicle waiting for the shooter.
You have the prosecution saying, hey, no motive, but it doesn't matter. He's just a crazy gang member. But there's no gang allegation. Okay. It couldn't have been a crime without motivation because there was a getaway driver. You know, you don't have a getaway driver if something just randomly pops off, right? This is a planned hit.
So, who was Billy Medlin, and why may someone have wanted him dead?
I know now, through the evidence that's been found, is that Mr. Medlin, this individual who got murdered, he was involved in a case at the time where there, I believe, 15 people were locked up for murder in a different county. 10 days before their trial, he ends up getting murdered. That's what actually clicked. That's what I thought of is when they drove me down to the police station. They told me to watch my back because this individual was tied up with some people.
So, obviously, then the situation becomes that it looks like that he's been killed because he's a witness and they don't want him up on the stand against the other people who are on trial for murder.
Correct. Him and his brother-in-law. Him and his brother-in-law were part of that. I know that according to the transcripts involved in a whole nother different case, I know that there's a hit ordered to take out all the witnesses.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact? You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
On September the 27th, 1999, a two-year-old child was allegedly abused. Following this, a lady by the name of Derlene Westfall, the child's aunt, Jenny Okendo, and a group of others confronted two individuals at the home in which the child was staying. An altercation takes place where these two individuals, Charles Bordeaux and Scott Berryman, are blamed for the child's injuries, which was bruising to the cheek, and they are assaulted. Because of the amount of people that were there, there was nine plus the two men being assaulted, the commotion that was caused by the group became a concern. They were worried that the neighbours were going to call the police. So they take the two men, against their will, to the home of Jeffrey Dossett and Billy Medlin. Jeffrey was Billy Medlin's brother-in-law. Derlene Westfall says that Jenny Okendo then tells her to call another gentleman by the name of Thomas Timney. He was staying at the same motel, yet in another room. When Mr. Timney arrives, he is wearing a poncho and carrying a shotgun. Miss Westfall says that there was no question that Jenny Okendo was calling the shots that day. It was well known that her family had strong connections to a biker gang. Okendo, Jeffrey Dossett, the brother-in-law of Billy Medlin, and Timney apparently all huddled together. They're discussing what exactly they should do with these two men. Someone makes a suggestion of driving the men out to the desert. Jeffrey turns to his brother-in-law, Billy Medlin, and tells him to go fill the car up with gas, which he apparently does. Upon his return, Jeffrey Dossett, Thomas Timney, and another man by the name of Danny Vasquez all jump into a vehicle and drive the two men out to the desert. One man would be shot and killed, while the other was said to have been released by Timney and told never to come back. Derlene Westfall wrote this information as part of a declaration made from prison, where she was serving a sentence of 22 years to life for second-degree murder. She stated that after this situation had occurred, it was well known to the group that Jeffrey Dossett had been placed into witness protection for his part in snitching on the group. Derlene Westfall states that she has no doubt that Jenny Okendo, who was also tried and convicted for this crime, could have easily have arranged a hit on Billy Medlin from inside prison. She believes her father was some type of leader in this bikie gang. Derlene Westfall had never heard of Raimondo Chigoya until she was approached about this information while incarcerated. So what of Billy's brother-in-law, who turned snitch? He apparently died as well.
Did any of the other witnesses get attacked or killed or hurt or anything like that?
I don't know. I believe it was his brother-in-law. He hung himself.
Oh, wow.
When they tracked him down, that's what they found out, that he hung himself.
This, of course, would give Raimondo's defense attorney at trial a great opportunity to put forward an ulterior motive, an ulterior suspects in this particular case. I mean, the prosecution even say, well, there's no motive for Raimondo to kill Billy Medlin. He was just a gangster guy. So his defense attorney can go, well, no, they're right. There was no motive for Raimondo to kill Billy Medlin. But look who did have a motive to kill Billy Medlin. This would have been great at trial if his defense attorney had the information at the time. You know who did have this information at the time? The police and the prosecutors who had charged and were convicting Raimondo Chigoya. But they failed to provide it to his defense team, which is a clear Brady violation. What is a Brady violation? Well, it is simply when a prosecutor fails to provide a defendant or criminal defense attorneys with any favorable or helpful evidence to a defendant's case.
We have this victim is not only a part of and a witness to a very brutal kidnap and murder that happened in a neighboring county, His brother-in-law was cooperating with the prosecution against the other gang members in that case. And there was direct threats to his brother-in-law. And he was living with his brother-in-law. He was raising his brother-in-law's kids. These people had, you know, had said they were scared for their life. They were scared for their family's life. And these detectives working on Raymundo's case had this information and they didn't turn it over. And it just deprived Raymundo of putting on a fair and accurate defense. I mean, you have someone who clients rarely take the stand in their defense. And for him to get up and consistently maintain, I was at home, I went to the store, I got medicine, and the process, you know, I came home, I was home, and his story never wavered. To have the defense be able to put up a third party perpetrator defense would have made a really big difference in this case.
Now, if this wasn't enough to suggest that Mr. Medlin had been killed as a result of the crime that he witnessed, there is also a link between that case and the car that the shooter was seen getting into. Witnesses reported seeing the shooter run to the alley and get into a white car. This is important because the jury would hear repeatedly that Raymundo had a brown Chevy Blazer. He was even arrested while driving a brown Blazer. Yet no witnesses ever reported seeing this car the night of the murder.
I know in the trial, there was a witness that got on stand and said that it was actually the owner. She said that the individual who killed Mr. Medlin, he ran to the alley and took off in a white Volkswagen Jetta. And I know now that this white Volkswagen Jetta belonged to someone from it was a Westfall case in San Bernardino. That's where they found the cigarette butt, right, next to the getaway car.
Yeah, and did they ever test that cigarette butt for any sort of DNA or anything like that? Or
they did. It was probably in 2015. Raquel, she actually wanted to test it. I had a ex-LAPD come and swab me. They ran it through CODIS. It came back as it not being mine, and I guess the person it belonged to wasn't in the database.
This white car reportedly matched the description of the car owned by Jeffrey Dossett, the brother-in-law of Billy Medlin, and his car had been reported stolen just prior to the murder. There were, in fact, further witnesses who were interviewed. However, these witnesses would say they saw a black guy run from the scene, and when shown a six-pack, did not pick Raymundo Chagoya out. However, of course, these witnesses were never called to the stand.
If the defense attorney would have talked to those witnesses, would have explored more what did they saw and talked to them and got more information, there was descriptions that didn't match Raymundo. There was just so much evidence on a case that was already weak that really could have tipped the scale in his favor that just wasn't presented because of the failure of pretty much everybody in the criminal legal system at the time.
We have all this information now, but the jury at the time did not, and the trial was extremely quick. In fact, from arrest to verdict, it was only 6 months. Murder trials can take years to complete, but Raymundo tells me his attorney says he was under pressure to get cases done.
I have a declaration from my trial lawyer. And he told me that they're putting pressure on them at the time to get all cases done within 6 months. A murder case is supposed to take about 3 to 3.5 years to actually prepare and get everything ready.
Yeah.
I was going to trial within 6 months.
So you literally had, from the moment you got arrested to the moment you went on trial was 6 months, and then how long was the actual trial itself?
I believe the whole trial was done in 3 days. Everything was just, it was so quick.
When the jury went away to deliberate, were you still confident that they would come back and find you not guilty, or did you think that you were going to be found guilty?
No, I was confident that it was going to come back as the truth, as me being not guilty. And I remember when they found me guilty, I was in disbelief. I remember telling them, "You're going to lock up an innocent man for this." And I was crying, and I remember the bailiff came and he had to remove me from the court. As an 18-year-old, my life was over.
Two months later, Raimundo Chigoya is sentenced. And he begins that prison sentence. He never sees his trial attorney again, but with the help of his daughter's mother, he gets an attorney. However, that also would end badly.
Next thing you know, he's getting barred from being an attorney.
He got disbarred.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming all that money just disappeared.
So from I started going to the law library, and Legal Beagle told me how to get their money back to file. So I did, and they received their money back. So I started working on my case myself because I just had so many questions of why.
So you just put your sole focus into doing your own legal work?
Yeah, with the help of Legal Beagles, because I was illiterate at when it came to legal stuff. I really didn't understand the penal codes and the sections. And
oh, it's like another language.
Yeah, exactly. It really is.
I mean, I read it now and I still don't understand half of what I'm reading. It's very confusing.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I still get confused.
Although focused on his case and getting answers, he is still an 18-year-old Hispanic kid going to prison for the first time. And he had to learn quickly. And it started with learning about prison segregation.
I remember when I was young, I watched American Me. It's an old prison movie. To the viewers that are hearing this, it's nothing like that. As a kid, they sent me to Cali Pad in level 4. It was difficult. I seen a lot of bloodshed. I avoided all the politics. I remember when I was on the yard crew, I had an older guy that told me, stay away from the drugs and the politics, and that's what always stood in my mind is that. So I always have.
As a Hispanic man, did you get approached by the Hispanic sort of gangs inside prison to see if you wanted to join them?
No, I remember when I first got there, they asked me who I rolled with, and I didn't know what that mean. I told them, I don't know what you're talking about, but I'm not affiliated. And which they sold me up with an older Indian. I remember going inside his cell. He looked at me and he was like, "What are you? Where are you from? Where are you out of?" I said, "Riverside County, and I'm not affiliated." And he was like, "Oh no, you got to go with your kind." I didn't know what that meant. I know he called someone over there and they talked to him and they had me move with the older guy that was a Southerner.
Yeah, right. So they basically, it's all about segregation of race and ethnicity.
Yeah, correct. If you're in here, there's no saying non-affiliated. They're going to house you with somebody. And that somebody might be tied, that somebody might be a gang member,
which makes it even harder to stay out of trouble, I suppose, because if you're forced into that situation, you know, sometimes you might not have a choice.
For the most part, I remember when I got there, there was older guys that knew my family. they knew of them, so they really didn't force anything upon me.
The family name that kind of not got you in this situation but didn't help your situation was now sort of helping you while you were incarcerated because people were sort of leaving you alone.
Yeah.
You've got board coming up where you're up for parole here because of your age that you were when you were convicted of this crime. It's your first time in front of the board. Are you hopeful that you will get given parole?
I know that they want an individual to go in there and show their remorse and their insight of why they committed the crime. The only thing that I can go in there and speak of is the kind of lifestyle that I chose to live. And I understand now that it was my lifestyle of why they pointed me out. I would like to believe that all things happen for a reason. I still struggle with that. But looking at the person that I was back then, I understand that I was hurt and it was coming out more and more. I wanted this person that actually killed my brother to feel what kind of pain my mother and the whole family was going through.
So do you think that if you hadn't been incarcerated for this crime, that you may have ended up in a situation of your own doing?
Absolutely. I know I would have. I know if I wasn't incarcerated for this crime that I didn't commit, that I would have been incarcerated for something that I did.
So do you feel like this, although wrongfully incarcerated, do you have some sort of sense of feeling that this incarceration saved you from something worse or doing something worse?
I know it did. I know it did.
You have 1 minute remaining.
This is the story of Raimundo Chigoya for now. But, of course, as mentioned, he does have the opportunity of parole coming up very soon. And we will keep you across how that goes and whether or not he is granted that parole. Raimundo Chigoya does have a semblance of a light at the end of the tunnel of his unjust sentence. Coming up in our next episode, I speak to a man who has got the longest sentence of anyone I have ever spoken to.
All in all, there's like eight felonies. I got life and 104.
Life and 104?
Yes.
Hearing that phenomenal sentence, you'd be forgiven for thinking that I was about to speak to a serial killer. Well, you'd be wrong.
Did the guy that got assaulted, he didn't die or anything like that?
No, he got a little cut on the top of his head.
Next time on 1 minute Remaining. 1 minute Remaining is a Mashed Pumpkin production, created, hosted, and produced by Jack Lawrence. Audio and sound design by Jack Lawrence and Dom Evans of Earsay.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.